And you're tuned to KIBU Community Radio 90.7. Up next, we'll hear Art Focus with host Joseph Gallivan. Today's guest is Portland-based artist RV Smith, who's showing his work at Mark Woolley Gallery this month.
KBOO Community Radio is a proud co-sponsor of the Improvisation Summit of Portland, June 4th through 6th at Disjecta in Portland. This all-ages event brings together musicians, dancers, and experimental performers for 3 days of improvisational art. Performers include Roscoe Mitchell, Jonah Parzan Johnson, Linda Austin, Gordon Ashworth, Either Neither, and many, many more. Again, that's the Improvisation Summit of Portland, Thursday, June 4th through June 6th at Disjecta, 8371 North Interstate Avenue in Portland. More information can be found at kboo.fm on the right side of the homepage under Community Events.
Andy Warhol looks at screen, hang him on my wall. Andy Warhol, silver screen, can't tell them apart at all.
My name's Joseph Gallivan, and you're listening to Art Focus on KBOO Portland. My guest this week is painter RV Smith. His new show, Tightrope, is on now at the Mark Woolley Gallery through July the 12th. Thanks for coming to KBOO,
RV. Thank you, Joseph. Thank you for having me. It's a pleasure being here.
So this show is oil paintings, very bright, very big, and very dynamic. Everything is filled with color, action, faces, characters, image, symbolism, and it's a real in-your-face show. It's very energetic. You go in there and it's like watching a newsreel in a way, because you're just gripped as you go through. So you called it Tightrope, and one of the paintings is called Tightrope. What's going on in that?
That's actually a portrait of people that I have. It's a composite, actually, of people that I keep a sketchbook. I draw a lot. And so I put this together to talk about what it is that I'm seeing. The impetus for that piece was I was in Senegal at El Gori visiting the slave castles. I got a grant from RAC to visit the slave castles on the west coast of Africa. I went to Gori, and while there, I met some African people, and they invited me to a party that they were having on New Year's. All week long, I had seen these Senegalese people in these incredible flowing outfits, and it was just gorgeous. And I said, oh, wow, that's a beautiful way to dress. I went to the party that night, and all the beautiful robes and gowns were gone, and everybody was in 50s suits and 50s dresses, and it was really quite interesting. Wow. So that so I put the tie on the man and the 50s suit.
Why were they trying to look 50s, or were they just trying to look like Western?
Trying to look Western. There's a great Western influence there, a European influence. Things that you would hope that you wouldn't see in Africa, of people straightening their hair and trying to use products that would make them look lighter, which resonates with what's happened to African Americans in which we've become ashamed of being black.
Oh, and Tightrope is a portrait of a young man. He's in a suit and tie, and behind him is a tightrope with two clowns.
With two clowns.
Crossing the tightrope.
Right.
So what do the clowns symbolize?
Those clowns are those influences, those European influences, that's telling this man that he is somehow inferior. And that's a pretty common approach that Europeans take to African Americans.
Mm-hmm. There's another painting called Honky Tonk. Where there's a woman dancing and her skirt is made of bananas. And there are cartoon characters in the background, which there are in many of these paintings. Popeye, I think Betty, Betty Boop in there somewhere?
No, not Betty Boop, but Orphan Annie.
So it's the cartoons of the middle of the century or the early 20th century. Yeah. Who is this sexy woman dancing with bananas?
In the 20s, 30s, 40s, there was a performer by the name of Josephine Baker. She was the highest paid entertainer in the world at that time. She had an incredible experience in Paris, did very well. But when she came back to the United States, she was rejected. The skirt, she called it a banana girdle, and she did that dance for years, and she's quite an incredible woman.
What was the skirt like?
It was made of, well, not real bananas, but it was made of bananas, and it was called a banana girdle. And
oh, okay, so it was like plastic bananas or something.
Right.
So it's kind of like Carmen Miranda with her fruit hat.
Exactly.
But different.
She was an incredible performer and went on to adopt a lot of children and actually ended up somewhat tragically.
Why did you focus on her?
I like to dance. I studied some ballet and the black neighborhood, you're nothing if you can't dance. So dancing is part of my life and part of the African-American culture. And she was, of course, African-American. So I kind of struck on that.
Is the idea that there are symbols in this that are denigrating her?
Well, she was denigrated. At first, she wasn't willing, from my understanding, to dance nude. But she was later convinced to do that. But there's also an opposing view that she really enjoyed doing that kind of exposure. But the painting is called Honky Tonk. Within the painting, there are people like Blondie, Dagwood, and there's his son. And the Honky Tonk, according to my granddad and Dick Gregory, was the whorehouses were always located in the ghetto.
And what does tonk mean?
It's just a club. Just means
club. Oh, okay. It means place.
Yeah.
Oh, I didn't realize. So he's got like dollar signs coming out of his cigar smoke. He's like sort of exploitative capitalist.
Yeah, he's the pimp.
Bad guy.
Yeah.
What are the cartoon characters? What do they mean? What's Popeye doing in there?
Popeye was always promoting war, promoting violence, beating up people. I see him as that kind of influence that we get subliminally from childhood about this world of violence that we're being introduced to. And it's subtle, but it's real.
You know, I was amazed. Me and my son got for 50 cents at a garage sale, like a box set of DVDs with 600 cartoons on. And it included all that old stuff, old early Popeye, Betty Boop, Steamboat Willie, all that stuff. And he was watching it and he loved Popeye because he's just like, Popeye is just so violent. And Brutus is even more violent. And he's the bad guy because he's even more misogynist. They're tearing olive oil apart. And you think, wow, people watch this when they're little.
Well, Steamboat Willie. Steamboat Willie was the first Mickey Mouse. And it was a caricature of black people. And so we have all of these derogatory caricatures that are filtered into our childhood. And we grow up with those and they become normal. We accept them as being part of we tend to internalize them on another level.
Yeah. So there's a big painting called Hands Up, Don't Shoot, and it's the pancake lady, is it? Or is it Annie Panther?
No, it is.
So what's her name? Aunt Jemima?
Aunt Jemima. Aunt Jemima
off the bottle.
Was given to us by W.C. Wyeth, Andrew Wyeth's dad.
Sorry, who's that?
W.C. Wyeth. He's a painter. They produced this whole scenario around Aunt Jemima, and they had real Aunt Jemimas. They took them to state fairs and so forth. And this one, I'm talking about those people who African Americans are still seen as inferior by some people, and that same Aunt Jemima kind of thing. In the movies, African Americans had five roles that they could play. One was a Tom, one was a Coon, one was a Mammy, one was a Nanny, and the other one was the Big Buck. So you've got your Mammy in Aunt Jemima. And here are the people, my people, who built this country, and now we're having to plead for people not to shoot us.
So in the picture, she's got her hands up, but she's holding two plates of pancakes with butter on top.
Yeah.
And then you've got the Fox News crew, but it looks like an old movie camera from the 20s with a fox on it. Stage lighting, a red theatrical curtain, a fire, a Klansman in green, which seems a bit odd, or maybe it's a color temperature issue. And a Confederate flag, U.S. flag, and the Klansman is sort of ushering away a little black maid. And then there's this police line, do not cross, the yellow tape. So you're trying to say all this imagery was apparent to you during the Ferguson riots.
I was born in the Jim Crow South. And this kind of thing, the lynching of African Americans was common. In 1992, in the town that I was born in, not born in, but when I moved there with to live with my grandparents at about age three, in that town in 1992, they drug a man to death, an African-American man by the name of James Byrd.
Behind a truck.
Behind a truck. And I did a painting about that some years ago. And this time, the there's a mysterious death of this young man named Alfred Wright, and no one seems to know what happened. You know, he apparently, according to the sheriff, committed suicide, cut out his tongue and cut off his ear, and cut his throat. You know, it was a terrible suicide.
right, not very plausible.
yeah, not very at all, and. But that's the kind of mentality, it seems, that the people in the Deep South were able to get away with, the kind of explanations they were able to get away with in the past, because the sheriff was in on, you know, in on the deed. I've done research at the Schomburg and Howard University and places like that, and you see sheriffs in their Klan outfits, and the Klan outfits were not always white. They denoted your rank, who you were, Grand Dragon or whatever those things were, and some were green, some were red, white.
Right. How did you work on the color tones, the flesh tones? Is some are very black and blue, some are very orange. The predominant colors of the show are kind of red and yellow.
Yes.
But some people have different colored skin. What were you doing?
Well, when I was in art school, one of my professors asked me, where did I get that color palette, because it seems a little different from what you see in Oregon. And my great-grandmother and my grandmother made quilts. They made crazy quilts, and they had all these oranges and greens and those kind of patterns. And I said, well, maybe it was from that. But then I went to Africa, and it was all clear. That's what they wear. And so, you know, that genetic memory is...
Oh, you think it was sort of innate in you?
I believe so,
to favor that those colors. Yeah. But why the dark blue-black for some people?
In Africa, in Ghana, in other parts, Burkina, there are people that are blue-black, beautiful, beautiful people, and they've... Underneath the black is this blue hue, and just incredible looking people.
Oh, so you just felt like doing it?
Oh, yeah. I'm also, even though I've been painting for all my life, I'm always trying to learn. I'm always trying to learn how to get the kind of reaction, the kind of reaction within me and within my audience with the use of color. Mm-hmm. And my colleagues called me a colorist.
My name's Joseph Gallivan. You're listening to Art Focus on KBOO Portland. My guest this week is Arvi Smith. His show Tightrope is on now at the Mark Woolley Gallery in the Pioneer Place Mall on the third floor, and it runs through July 12th. Arvi, you are a retired professor from PNCA, so you're painting a lot more. What kind of music do you listen to when you're working?
I listen to jazz, I listen to blues, Ray Charles, Oscar Brown Jr. I like Coltrane a lot.
What format do you use? Records, radio?
I have CD player. I crank it up.
So you can listen to like several hours of music without intervening. And you just paint? How does it change the way you paint?
Listening to the music, I have one temperature, one movement, and then sometimes I just have to shut it down and listen and look. I spend more time in the studio looking than I do painting.
Oh, and really?
And I understand. Then I see it, and then I go do it.
So the action of painting is okay with music. It's sort of rhythmic or energetic.
Yeah.
But then you need quiet to look.
Yeah,
exactly. So you brought in a track for us to listen to. What is it?
Oh, Miles Davis, Kind of Blue. I like Kind of Blue. That's the one that I'd like to hear.
What does that music do to you?
I look at people like Miles, Coltrane, Michael Jackson, all of these incredible African-American musicians, and I say, this is who I am. These are my people. This is what we do. This is what's pretty much available to us, actually. I know when I was in high school, I was pushed toward basketball because I'm tall,
right,
rather than science.
Right.
But I wanted science. But, and that was the option.
There's another painting called Leapfrog.
Leapfrog.
And it's a... It's a woman. It looks like an old white woman with topless, leaping over a black. Sorry, an old white man topless.
Yes.
Yeah, with pendulous breasts, leaping over a young black convict, and they're both on a trapdoor which is not open. Who's the old guy on the back of this convict?
What I'm talking about there is that, as a teacher. I go to school, and I see in my classroom pretty much all people of European descent. And then I've done a 2-year project at Donnelly Long Justice Center, and I'm working there with Measure 11 children, and they're mostly black and Latino. So what I'm talking about there is how the educational system leapfrogs over African Americans, and those African Americans end up in the prison system. Michelle Alexander has written this incredible book called The New Jim Crow, and she talks about mass incarceration. And this mass incarceration happened in 1982 after President Reagan decided that the war on drugs and flooded our neighborhoods with drugs and guns. But there wasn't really a drug epidemic at that time because crack cocaine didn't hit the streets until 2 years after 1982. So that war on drug was all about money. So now we have our private prisons. And we found another way to enslave African Americans.
So you work closely with people in prison to do art? What sort of value is art to someone who's in prison?
The children that I'm working with, they're from 13 to 18. The advantage, some of them ask me, Arvy, when I get out of jail, can I come study art with you? And it's kind of therapy, but it's so tragic because these are lost lives. And we can, and that's what I'm talking about with my attorney, Bernie.
With Leapfrog.
With Leapfrog. But I'm not talking about one single issue. I'm talking about a number of issues within those paintings.
So what's My Attorney Bernie about? It's a lawyer with a bunch of cash in his pocket and a flower. He's blue-eyed, red-haired, and he's kind of like a country boy. He's got and he's in a country landscape. So who's Bernie?
Bernie is in my work with the kids in juvenile hall. I see their attorneys coming in to talk with these kids during the visiting hours, and in some cases, and in a lot of cases, they're encouraging these kids to plead to a felony. And the kid, and you won't do much time, and you'll be out of here in no time. But what they've done is really ruined their lives. Because in some cases, they can't get housing, they can't get food stamps, they can't get government loans, government student loans. Their lives are ruined forever. And in some states, they can't vote. So it's
so the attorney's working against their interests.
Yes, they are not. I don't think because they're necessarily bad people, but it's systemic. It's what their job requires. And if they don't go along with that, in talking to some attorneys, if they don't go along with that, then they have to deal with what happens in their office. They're ostracized.
How do you negotiate between stereotypes and cartoon characters, and when do you ever bleed one idea into the other?
Yeah, I do. I the stereotypes, like in Tightrope, Aunt Jemima, the stereotypes of, we had a restaurant here called the Coon Chicken Inn, which with the big smiling mouth, and it's in one of the paintings. Those kind of things are stereotypes. Some are just cartoons, but you really have to investigate that, because, like I said, Mickey Mouse is really a caricature of black people. So is Felix the Cat, and on it goes. You know, you mentioned Steamboat Willie.
What do you think of the whole purging of? I feel like people are trying very hard to get rid of that stuff, very consciously change their language. Everyone's very careful. Is that doing anything? Or when you look at a scene on the TV of something real, of like a protest, do you just see a whole new set of imagery?
In my opinion, there's a difference between protest and movement. A protest is, you're protesting, and then you form a movement, What we see is the protests. What we see is civil disobedience. But we don't see what's underlying that. And what the news media is showing us is really not true. It's true because the media says it's true, but it's not true. I was watching one thing and they were saying, they were in Baltimore. They were saying, look down this alley, look at what's happening. Nothing's happening down the alley. I was just talking to a professor last night. She was my dean in graduate school, and she did a talk at PCC, Dr. Leslie King Hammond. She was saying, no, that's really not the real story that was going on in Baltimore. But I've also worked in Baltimore on projects. I know the racism is palpable.
Is painting, does it feel like the right way to address all this for you?
Mm-hmm. It's my voice. No black man is ever secure in his profession, in his job. So in my profession, I really have to be careful about what I say and how I say it, because there are consequences. In my art, nobody tells me what to do.
My name's Joseph Gallivan. You've been listening to Art Focus on KBOO Portland. My guest this week was Arvy Smith. His show, Tightrope, is on now at the Mark Woolley Gallery on the third floor of Pioneer Place Mall downtown, and it runs through July 12th. Thanks for coming in to KBOO, Arvy. It's great to hear your other voice.
Well, thank you, Joseph. I appreciate the invitation. It's a pleasure.
Andy Warhol looks at screen, hang him on my wall. Andy Warhol, silver screen, can't tell them apart at all.
Tune into KBOO on Wednesday, June 3rd at 9 a.m. to hear Angela Davis with Living the Legacy, The Meaning of Freedom, recorded in January 2015 at Portland State University.
In the 1960s and the 70s, we thought revolution was around the corner. We thought the revolution should have already been there, but it was definitely coming in a couple of years. And this was world revolution, not just in the U.S., but world revolution. I don't think we won the revolution we thought we were fighting for, but we did bring about a lot of changes, changes without which we would not be gathered here this evening.